heard already from me at one time or another. But I'm going to start from scratch, assuming that nobody knows anything. So we're going to start with my qualifications. Right? I've been a deacon of this church going on over 17 years. I have taken martial arts for over 16 years. And at one point, I had studied two sister styles for over 6 years at one time. Right? I learned a lot of things. Mostly what I learned was what not to do. I am certified in CPR, first aid, AED, HAZWOPA, which is chemical spill and containment, and fire extinguisher training. So I'm considered a first responder at my job. I am slightly paranoid, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Is that open for discussion?
Well, you could say I may be really paranoid, but...
Okay.
By the if you look up paranoid, it is an excessive suspicion and fear of others and people around. You're like, yeah, I'm not quite that bad. I'm just pre-paranoid. I like to use this word, pre-paranoid. It's a state of suspicious readiness, right? The two styles that I took for martial arts, one was a traditional kung fu, and the other one was a non-traditional, militarized version taken from the other style. And my final test for that, there was only two ranks, student-teacher, right? To become a teacher, you were not told when you were tested. At the end of the class, the teacher would walk up to you, "You're testing tonight." Which meant you just went through a two-hour class to start with. Now you had another 2 hours to go. The test was you had to do all your forms and all your techniques. You had to take a couple and make them your own, explain them. And then the final test was they had a six-foot fighting circle, which meant from the center to the outside was 6 feet. So it was 12 feet across, which you could not leave. You were given the task of not beating them, but surviving, because you had 2 to 3 students who had already made that rank fighting you. My teacher decided 2 wasn't enough. He added 3. There's no time limit. There's no breaks. And I thought I failed. I went down 5 times, and I went down hard. Now, I'm given some gloves and some foot protection. They're not, because they're supposed to use some moderation of control. I'm supposed to do whatever I have to do to survive. Now, the teacher does not tell you at the end of the class either that you've passed or not. He waits a couple days. Makes you stew a bit. My test, I went down 5 times, and I had to fight my way back up 5 times. I actually hurt one of my, he was a friend of mine, bad enough he didn't show up for the next 2 days. I thought I had failed. So the teacher calls me into his office after the class, says, "Mr. Brown," I said, "I want to talk to you." And I'm going, says, "You went down 5 times." I said, "Yeah, I know." He says, "But you got up 5 times." He says, "You took a heck of a beating." I said, "Yeah. I mean, I still had the strawberries and the fat lip, the bruises. I couldn't use my right arm for 2 days. I fractured my little toe." He says, "That's good." I'm going, "How is that good?" He says, "You can take a beating well. That's why I initially allowed you into this special class. Because you could take a beating." I'm saying, "Okay, if that's a characteristic that's good, I'll take your word for it." He says, "The test is not to win. The test is to survive. In the old days, they didn't get gloves, and you did what you had to do to survive in the original test. We sort of civilized it a little bit," he said. Okay. So I said, "You have passed. You are now instructor level. You can teach the next class." If I could move. And the thing is, I was tested Friday night. We had another class Monday night. I showed up Monday night. He said, "You showed up Monday, and I told you you didn't have to." He said, "I'm not going to miss the class." He says, "That's the other reason." He says, "You're here." So that was my intro to teaching in martial arts. And it kind of gives me a frame of mind on how I approach self-defense. Now, over the years, as I said, I took a beating well. Could you pass that down to Nancy? Doesn't mean I fought well. And one of the things my teacher used to say is, like, sometimes it's not who's the best fighter, it's who can last the longest. So I guess in that sense, taking a beating well was a good thing. Now, this is a Christian perspective, all right? And the verse that I wanted to look at was this one here. It says, Romans 12, 18, if it be possible, now listen, if it be possible, as much as it lies in you, live peaceably with all men. There's a couple things you need to know. It says, if it be possible, and as much as it lies within you. As Christians, we're not called to lay down and take a beating. I believe biblically that we have a biblical precedent to defend ourselves. And if you have any questions, I have lots of articles and then one I'm working on myself that show biblically the precedent. You're not going to look up in Scripture and find self-defense. It's not under any of the headings. Same thing like you're not going to find the Trinity in Scripture because it doesn't use that wording, but you find the principles there. Right? So I believe, as Christians, we are called, yes, to defend ourselves, but we're also called at a different level. If it is possible, as much as it lies within you, live peaceably with all men. But when that doesn't that doesn't work, that's when we're going to come to this. And I'll get to this in a little bit, because this is fun. Right? Here's a quote from my father. He said this to me twice in my life. And the first time I heard it, I said, yeah, sure. I was getting the tar kicked out of me on a regular basis in school, and that's the reason why I took a good beating. I was a PC kid. No, PK kid, right, excuse me. Preacher's kid. My father was a Methodist minister in town. My mother was a fourth grade school teacher. My babysitter was the daughter of the chief of police. We used to spend summers at the chief's camp on the lake. My best friend was a school bus driver. So I could not get away with anything without my parents knowing about it. Plus, being a preacher's kid, you have two options. You can be the holy terror or the holy roller. I didn't do either very well. I flopped around somewhere in the middle. But I also got the living tar kicked out of me on a regular basis because I had a problem controlling my temper. I was easy to rile up. And when I mean getting kicked, I mean literally getting kicked. In the school ground today, they'd be considered that they'd be people who would go into court. Bruises, cuts, and fat lips were a common thing weekly with me in junior high school and in elementary school. I learned a lot about how to take a punch. This quote my father said, he used to say, we cannot control the circumstances around us, right? But we can control how we act in those circumstances. Now, he was telling me that to try to tell me, you know, all right, you're being beat up, you can control your temper. I kind of took it later on to mean something else, and I reformed it myself. But it is true. This is God's purview. The circumstances around us. This is how we react to what God has placed in our path. I work on the preference of paranoid. It's a suspicious state of readiness. And John is saying, yeah, okay, yeah. No, I say a little paranoid, I can be a lot paranoid. But it's a good paranoid. It's not a psychologically I'm injured paranoid. Right? And I work on the principles of the AAFF, awareness, avoidance, flight, and fight. Okay? And I'm going to go through each one of these and explain them. Because you can say, well, Mr. Brown, you're supposed to be aware. How do you do that? I'm going to show you how. I'm going to give you some tips and some training things to teach you how to teach your brain how to be aware. Because I believe in today's society, we are being smothered with technology to the point where we're being made unaware. We are being made to be mental midgets, tunnel visioned, and just
unaware.
2 weeks ago, there was a news report of a young man who got hit by a train and lost both his legs below the knees. Do you know why? He was walking down the tracks wearing his brand new noise-canceling earbuds, didn't hear the train coming, didn't hear the train go beep, beep until it was too late, When he turned around, it ran him over. He lost his legs. You look at the commercials today. They're showing the guy playing with his phone, and all these characters are popping up, you know. But his face is buried in the phone. They want us to be oblivious because it sells their product. But it puts us at danger. Now, in fight, I work on a couple different things. This is what I call the five disparities. Disparity of size. That's why I picked Eli as my uki, which uki literally means dummy. It's the person who takes the punch. In martial arts, they use uki and tori. Tori is the puncher and uki is the punchy. And it's done to show how it's done and make the person showing the technique look good. I'm doing it because so I don't hurt him more than I have to. I mean, necessary. I've been playing with him for the last couple weeks on that one. Paul kindly offered to bring some extra ice packs to keep the swelling down. So I work on the five disparities: size, position, skill, age, and that's also physicality. I'm a short, squat old man with arthritis and prosthetic knees. I also figured if I can show you how to do it and do it, you can do it. And then attitude. This one is very important. This is your attitude, right? And we're going to go over the proper attitude to have. Basically, you cannot experience two major emotions at the same time. You cannot experience fear to its fullest if you're pissed off. All right? So I'm going to start out with a little story. It's sort of like a parable, and it's true. Now, in my life, I have been cut and stabbed a couple times. I've been cut with a straight razor. I've been stabbed with an ice pick. And if I had followed these things, that would not have happened. Although I wouldn't have the interesting stories to tell. This one happens to be, I want you to listen to the story. And I want you, when I'm done, after we get done with somebody's presentation, I'm going to ask you, what did I do right and what did I do wrong? What could have been some of the consequences of what had happened? Because when we get to this point, the consequences don't matter. It's already too late, and whatever happens, happens, and you do what you have to do to walk home, or gimp home, or limp home, or take the ride in the ambulance while they don't. We went to Six Flags, and Jacob was about, I'm not sure how old, but he was just tall enough for the first time to ride on the new Superman ride. Now, you guys who don't know Jacob now is six something, right? When he was younger, he was a shorty. He didn't start growing until his senior year in high school, and he grew 6 inches over the summer. He was a shorty. And he wanted to go on the roller coaster ride. He wanted to go on the Superman. He got tired of riding on Poison Ivy's Wild Ride. That was the kids' roller coaster, because that was the only thing he was tall enough to go. And I think he actually cheated, because when we went up to the line, I think he just did one of these, too, to make sure. So he was very excited about going on this roller coaster ride, and I'm probably just as excited as he was. Dad, you know, bonding thing, we get to go on his first real roller coaster ride, and I had not been on the Superman yet myself. Yeah, I was in for a surprise too. Now, the ride was new, so the line was extremely long. They had put up extra baton, you know, the curtain things. And we had been in line for over an hour already, and we finally got up to the steps. We actually started to go up steps. And we were up about like the second or third flight. And there was a large group of inner city kids, probably brought in by a local church group. They're all wearing the same t-shirts, Hispanic, black, Muslim nationalities. And I'm not racially profiling, I'm just mentioning because you'll see some significance to this. There's a couple, three young men ahead of us. Yuppies would be the appropriate word, because they, you know, the Izod shirts and the khaki jeans. But there was three of them, and one was the top dog, obviously, because he was pushing around and, you know, harassing the other two, and they were kind of like following on. So he was the lead in his little pack. Now, as we're going along, they were pushing and shoving the whole time, creating disturbances, to the point where the young lady in front of me with the two little kids said, when we got to one platform, would you mind, you can come and stand in front of us, you know, give us some space. And because Jake was, because every time we stopped, Jake's trying to shift his weight. He's like, Jake, you can wait, And she saw how excited he was, and she, I think she also thought, okay, get me a little bit of distance from these nitwits. We just got onto one of the main platforms and stepped up onto the next step. Now, being said, these kids were being very, very loud, ruckus, pushing, loud, vocal, rude, stepping on people, pushing people, cutting in line. So generally, they were not behaving themselves well. And at one point, they started pushing around so much, and Jake had stepped up in front of me, and he pushed one of his friends almost into me, so I stopped him. Did it again, and this time he took a big step back as his friend pushed him back a lot. I stopped him and put Jacob off to the side. He turned around with anger and venom in his face saying, I'm gonna beat the... He wasn't looking at me. He was looking at Jacob. He took a step down. I took a step up. I met him. And as I did that, I pushed Jacob off to the side. Now, the instant that happened, the crowd miraculously parted like the Red Sea. All these inner city kids knew, oh, carp, something's going to happen. Instantly, woof. The young lady behind me, I say young, she's maybe in her late 20s, Hispanic lady, said, honey, Chico, why don't you just stand over here with me? And took him over about 3 feet away. Now, the minute I stepped up, I knew exactly what I was going to do. I also had the attitude, I think I even said it. I'm not clear. I said, I don't think so. Now, we're nose to nose. Well, more or less. He's still one step up. There was three of them. We'll call them Mo, Larry, and Curly. In that moment, I knew exactly what I was going to do. Mo was going to be singing soprano for the rest of his life. Larry was going to learn a hard lesson about what gravity and meeting the ground means, because if anything above 15 feet, you're traveling about 20 miles an hour when you hit the ground. And we were 25 feet off the ground. Curly was going to get stuffed between the hurricane fence and the railing, and that was only a 6-inch gap. They were going to need the jaws of life to extract his sorry keister out between that. I knew exactly. And I had the attitude, I wasn't angry, but I was like a piece of stone. This is the wall. You're not getting through, around, or over to my son. And I stood there. And my hands are at my side. They're not clenched. And I'm sitting there and just looking at him. And I have a very tight but expressionless face. And he's there clenching. You can see the veins popping out in his neck. He's getting red-faced. And then all of a sudden, Larry realized, uh-oh. And he was very quick to realize this. Stumbled back a couple steps, very quickly stepped away. His friend wasn't quite as quick, but then realized, okay, they abandoned him. He's standing there now for, it seemed like a longest time, but I'm sure it happened very quickly. You know, all of a sudden now the red of anger is quickly changing to the red of, oh, carp, I just stepped in it. This guy's not a pushover. This short little fat guy's going to tear me a new one. And I literally would have. He was right, perfect position. I was glad he was one step above me because that gave me perfect, you always go for low-hanging fruit. Figuratively, literally. Took him a couple seconds to wind down, get control, and swallow. And then he just backed off and turned around. Okay, and then the crowd settled out and Jacob came up to me. I asked him the other day if he remembered that. He has a brief memory of it, doesn't remember much other than someone was pushing around on the steps. He didn't remember what happened. Well, you guys were going on some other ride. Yeah. Your mother doesn't like roller coasters. To his benefit, about 10 minutes later, as we're going up, he turned around, and I'm going, okay. And he said, sir, I apologize, I'm sorry, and extended his hand, and I shook his head. I said, I accept your apology. That's all it was. He behaved himself. They behaved themselves for the rest of the ride all the way up there. They didn't push around or anything. Later that day, every time they came by and his friends saw me or Jacob, they'd say, hey, so-and-so, there's your friend from the stairs. And he's going like, oh, shit. And I go, hi, guys, how you doing? You having a good time at the park? All right. So I want you to think about, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? What could have been the consequences? Because all these kids were minors, okay? I'm obviously not. Where would I have stood legally? We're looking at possible. The kid rolling over the rail was, we were over 25 feet. All right? He would have hurt himself. The kid getting stuffed into this hurricane fencing would have had, you know, those little triangle marks on his back probably for the rest of his life, and maybe his face was kind of like. Junior would have been singing soprano, definitely. All right? So just give that some thought. As we go along, you'll see, because one of the things we need to be aware of in being paranoid and being aware is, what is our responsibilities? What are the legal consequences? Where do we stand in the law? Because this only happens when there are no other choices, when there are no legal grievances or methods that we can take. You've just stepped in the carp of it very badly, and you have no choice. So we want to practice these thoroughly. The best way, my teachers tell me, is to, the best block against a punch is not being there. This is a block. My head is no longer in the path of the fist. Okay? Your best defense against violence or being involved in a fight is just don't get in one or don't be there. Because I guarantee whoever you're coming up against is going to know more about pain than you do, is know more about fighting than you do, and is going to be strongly motivated, for whatever reason he wants, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, to get what you got and what he wants. And certain types of situations, you're not going to be able to talk your way out of it. Criminals don't think the way we do. There's two types of criminals, basically. They come down to the person who uses violence as a tool to get what he needs, and then the one that uses violence because that's what he wants. That's like the psychopath, the psychotic. He wants the pain. He wants to cause someone pain and see it happen. If you get that one, you're in deep trouble. So the best way is not to be involved. Most street people know the rules better than we do. I have some handouts. Let's see which one is it. Where is this one? Where, I'm looking for the one. Where is it? I have some general handouts, but in general, there are some. Here we go. I'm trying to be organized. Has anybody ever seen this cartoon from the Far Side?
Yeah.
Pigeon's view of the world or a bird's view of the world? Well, that's the criminal's view of the world. They're looking around with everybody has a target on them. They're looking for a prospective target. They are looking for opportunities. And one of the things that they do, they actually have a set of rules they go by, whether they know it or not. The FBI and the police have actually gotten down to where they have like 5 or 6 indicators that they're looking to get somebody. They're like sharks in the water. First one is spatial awareness. Spatial awareness is how aware of what the things and objects around you. They're going to test to see how aware you are. How close can they get to you before you see them or recognize them or say, I see you? Right? That could be just walking up to you. And they could be walking up to you. And if you look at them, you've just said, yeah, I see you. All right, the second part of the test is to see how close they can get once you see them. They could ask you, do you have any change? Do you have change for a buck? Or do you have the time? Or I'm kind of turned around. Can you give me directions? All right? And they continue to walking towards you. Now, if you fail that in their eyes, you're not a viable target. They're going to go somewhere else because they want to spend the least amount of effort to get what they want. They're looking for an easy target. If your face is buried in your cell phone, they can walk right up to you and punch you in the head and you wouldn't even know it. So the idea is to be aware of your surroundings, what's going on. Awareness is spatial awareness. It's head knowledge. It's being observant, taking in what's going around. Not being distracted, having a clear frame of what you're doing, why you're doing it. Walking with some confidence, with your head up, your eyes forward, not tunnel vision, not too focused on something. Because then they're going to test you a little bit more. But if you fail the first one, or the first two parts of the first one, they're going to go to someone else. And it's perfectly legitimate to be rude. I'm sorry. This is especially for our younger kids. We teach our kids to be respectful. No. Right. They get to a certain age. You see them, and they continue walking towards you. You go, what can I do for you? I got one hand up, and I got one hand down. But I'm also, what Pete says, deblated. It's a certain stance you take. Right. From this, I can run, shift. Right. I got one hand up. You're creating a verbal and physical barrier. You're saying, that's close enough. If they continue walking, it says, you can say, that's close enough. Stop where you are. Being aware of where you are if you're on the street. There's a possible wall on your right, cars on your left. What's behind you? You could be having a friend, because that's the other thing. Movements that are coordinated, they may work in packs. Where he is distracting you, coming towards you, see if you're a viable target, his friend is already coming around the other side of the street, across the street, and is coming up behind you. Watch his hands. If you can't see his hands, he's not getting closer than 15 feet to me. I said, stand right there. What do you want? I can't see your hands. I'll say that. I can't see your hands. Let me see your hands. And if he starts acting and sputtering, he's got something else on his mind. Because me think he doth protest too much. When someone's caught in a lie, how much more did they... right? Back off. Not interested. Firm, not mean. Firm, controlling. You are in control. You're controlling what you can in your circumstances. Now, if they continue, that's a different matter. But the idea is to not be... the target. So your first is spatial awareness. Now, when I said the person could be crossing around, coming in behind me, whenever I'm walking in the street, especially in the mall, now I learned this because of Megan, and I'll get into a little story about that. I used all the reflective surfaces of window. I'm not looking at Frederick's to look at the fancy underwear and stuff. I'm looking in there to see what's behind me. When Megan was younger, she had the uncanny ability to attract nutcases. She would go to the mall, and she would have three or four young teenagers following her around, drooling at the mouth. Now, because I am a little paranoid, I observed these things. And more often than not, I would let her and mother walk ahead and stop and actually say, guys, go away. And they'd be like, ooh, not realizing that I knew they were following them. Use the things around you, not only what's barriers against you and for you. Use surfaces to watch and keep an eye on your back. Now, this is a story of Megan. Megan's had a couple incidences where she's actually had stalkers. One was in a Mustang that would follow her. Every time she left at work, would follow her and be taking pictures with his camera. Now, I approached the local police about this, and at the time, Jacob was doing his DLE at the Southwick Police. That's dedicated learning experience, where he went to ride-alongs, learned about what it was to be a police officer. I believe the local police went and talked to this young man, because he came out of the same street every time, had a specific bright yellow Mustang car. I think they went and talked to him and said, cut it out. You're freaking the lady out. He stopped. Another incident was she's working in the drive-thru at McDonald's, and this guy would pull up and startle her, scare her, and video film it. Now, we complained to the police about that. They said, there's really nothing we can do about it. He's not doing anything illegal. Well, they went by his house just to friendly, you know, say, hey, we know you're being an idiot. Stop it. The video camera's in his car seat in the driveway, and he's a 45-year-old man living at home with mama. He kind of tapered off after that. There's one other incident. She had been dating somebody that, on the sly, let's put it this way. She broke it off. She got far smart enough to break it off. He didn't get the message. He worked with her. Got to the point where he got to be such a problem, they fired him. He got a job, the business, up over the side, top of the hill, just the street over from where McDonald's was. And he'd come out in the parking lot when she was on breaks and come and bother her. And she's already made her, I'm not interested, very clear. Now, this has been going on for a while. She came and complained to me. Now, she just found out yesterday what happened. I just told her for the first time. I was going on to do something in Southwick, and I noticed he was out in the parking lot having a smoke. So I stopped, pulled over. Now, I technically didn't threaten him. But I made it very clear to him what I could do with a half-inch dowel 18 inches long if I so desired to do to somebody, without actually saying I'm going to do it to you. And I started with working from the toes on up and just gave some, you know how I can be about talking about that kind of stuff. And then my last statement was, she's not interested, leave her alone. He knew who I was. He'd been to the house. The minute I started, he froze. The minute I got out of the car, he's going like, and the cigarette's getting put. Finally, he was actually let it burn down to where he burned his fingers. While I'm talking to him, and I just sort of held him, every time he tried to shift, I just shifted a little bit, and so he didn't actually physically restrain him, but I made damn sure that he'd hear the whole conversation. He quit his job. He moved back to Connecticut. I think he got the message. Now, I know that's a little bit much. I take very seriously protecting those that are mine. Awareness, it's a frame of mind. It's knowledge, right? It's what's up here. It's the information you're taking in. It is not being the opposite of being oblivious. Okay? There's ways to train yourself to be aware. Some of these are fun. Now, one of them is called the what if game. Now, I was so proud because the what if game is how I taught my kids to drive. I started it with Megan, and I really codified it very strongly with Jacob, and then I added it to my martial arts. When you're driving, what if this person was to pull in front of you? What would you do? Or if this was to put his brakes on, what would you do? The idea is to have these scenarios in your head already so that if something like that happened, you're not trying to figure out what's going on and get out at the same time. Okay? The what ifs. In awareness, as far as self-defense is, what if this person has ill intent for me? I see this person walking towards me, and I get that little in the stomach. By the way, pay attention to that.
Yes.
Right? It's there for a reason. My father used to call it the blink. Now, my father was a staunch pacifist, did not believe in violence. I don't think he ever raised his fist to anybody in his life. And when I did try to teach him self-defense, he was very upset at me. He's 75 years old, he's living 2.5 miles out in the woods with his wife, and people drive up that driveway a lot of times by mistake or on purpose with different reasons. I've had to shoo people out of his property that were there that weren't supposed to be there. They had a bunch of kids who brought in the dirt bikes into the back of the property, set up a fire, and I happened to be down working at my mother's house, and my dad says, yeah, I just came back from the pond, and this couple guys just threatened me. I said, what? I'll be right there. He just said, guys, this is private property. You need to leave. Their response was, bleep, 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 and get out of here, old man. I went there, and their response was a little bit different. I said, this is private property. You will leave now, or I will make you leave. They decided to leave. So I taught him a little bit of stuff, and he was kind of like very upset at that. But he's a very staunch pacifist. But he did believe in paying attention. He said the blink. That's that momentary look when you look at someone and you get this gut-level response and feeling about the person. Now, there's a lot of reasons we get this, a lot of reasons why we're growing up, things that happen to us as we're younger, incidents, people, all kinds of, there's all reasons for that, but there are some reasons that are so subconscious, we do not know why. It's one of those things that my father would say in primitive man, because he didn't believe in creation, he believed in monkeys, that primitive man had as a safety. Well, whether you believe it or not, that gut reaction is there for a reason. Pay attention to it. Today's society has tried to drone that out of you, saying it's politically incorrect. You're profiling, you're racial profiling, you're treating them wrongly, you're assuming that they're a bad guy. Okay, I'm assuming he's a bad guy. If he isn't, oh well, I'll apologize to him up here later. That gut feeling is a reason. Pay attention to it. You can increase those, like I said, the what if game. You can be as extreme as playing the bad guy. Put yourself in a criminal state of mind, saying, who would I pick as a victim as you walk down the street? Looking at people saying, he's a victim. He'd be a potential victim. He'd be a potential victim. And then you say, why do you do that? Because, I know that's a little extreme. One of the ladies in church was talking to me. She says, you know, Mr. Brown, you think like a criminal. I'm going like, okay, I think that's a compliment. Thank you. But she says, I'll explain. She says, no, you think like a criminal so that if you've already thought about what they might do, so it's not going to happen. I say, thank you. That's a little bit better. So it's not bad to think that way sometimes. Okay? The other thing you can do is when you're talking to a person, right, you have peripheral vision? How often do we actually use it? Some people use it more than others, right? When you're driving, you should. Practice using your peripheral vision. When I'm speaking to Jenny here, I'm going to be looking at what's out here. Now, my peripheral vision goes out to about right there. I can still see my tips of my fingers. I have fairly good peripheral vision. Different people have. That's how you find out. You bring your hands out like this. You look straight ahead, and you bring your fingers out until you look straight ahead until you can't see them anymore. Now, down levels, I can see a little bit more down here where I can't see my tip, so the range is different. Practice while you're talking to someone using your peripheral vision. Now, at first, they're going to say, you're distracted or you're staring at me. It takes a little bit of practice to use your peripheral vision. When you're driving, it's a perfect time to practice using peripheral vision. Practice using your peripheral vision on your side mirrors without actually turning to look at them. Okay? Quick scanning. How often when we walk do we look straight ahead or look down? Right? Just look around. Make it a game. Be a people watcher. Look around and say, gee, there's interesting people. I love going to the wall, looking at all the interesting people. You know, just scan a little bit as you walk. You know, I know where I'm going. I don't have to walk at my feet. Sometimes I still trip over my feet, but that's because of my knees, but that's different. You don't have to watch where your feet are. But you can look at the top of the escalator rather than the bottom of the escalator. If something's going to happen that you're going to worry about an escalator, it's not going to likely to be in front of you. It's going to be likely halfway up or on top. Someone stumbles and falls, and then they have the domino effect. If you're not looking up there, you could jump out of the way because you've seen it ahead of time. But by the time you notice it, when it's two people in front of you, you're part of the domino. So practice scanning, changing your horizons. Right? So we have the what-if game, we have the criminal mind, we have your peripheral vision, we have scanning, okay? The idea is to engage your mind in what you do. Now, the thing is, you want to be focused. You don't want to be distracted. You know, how many times have we gone on errands and we're so tunnel visioned on what we have to do? I've walked into doors. I'm sad to say that I've actually had something taken out of my hands in a store. I've been pickpocketed. This pickpocket. Right. Very well done. Bump, turn, it's gone. I was shopping for Christmas. I had an iPod I bought for Jenny. Nice expensive gift in the Apple bag on the hand, my hand, along with the other bags. One bumped me, the other one just went, probably took it right off my hand. Before I realized it, and I looked down, I thought I dropped it. The time I stepped back, look around, check, by the time I realized it, I didn't drop it and someone took it, they're gone. Simple thing, when you're going shopping, take the Dollar Tree or the Christmas tree bag, put the expensive stuff in that bag. Because that Apple bag is a neon sign saying something expensive. Right? So you're being proactive. You're being aware. You're being active in what you do. Okay? It's easy to get distracted. Today's society, as I said before, tries to dumb you down and distract you out of your mind. Know what you're going to do. So you can take, all right, I'm going to the store, I'm going to do this. While you're going to the store, now you can spend your time and looking what's happening around you. Do you step out to the street without looking at traffic? We shouldn't. I mean, there's been times we're distracted enough. Not. That's common sense. Use common sense. Use that gut. Use those little tips I gave you about how to increase your awareness. Have the frame of mind that if you have to, you're getting behind, take a moment and breathe. All right. I'm having problems. Big deal. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be late. Doesn't matter. I'm going to be late. It's not going to be making a difference if I'm a half a minute later than I was. It's no big deal. All right? It's not worth getting hurt over. So keep your focus on what's going on. Now, the reason these are looped together is because these are tied together. Because of what you're taking in, being aware, you take steps to avoid things. Someone puts a barrier in the road, you see it, you go around it. You see someone suspicious walking across the street, and you see his other friend all of a sudden peel off and across the street and parallel down the street. I'm going in the store. Avoid it. Be aware to avoid the... Again, remember, your best way to avoid conflict is just not being there. You don't want to have a confrontation with someone and tell them, hey, back off, I don't mind interested. Just don't be there. Now, that being said, if you get that gut feeling and you go into a store and he's still out there, if you think you're being followed, you're probably being followed. All right? Today's society says that's politically incorrect. No, you're probably being followed. Simple way to tell. Three lefts, if they follow, then you're being followed. Simple way to break that and test it is like, you're walking down the street, you think someone's, I caught someone in my eye, and I do this with her all the time, that's how I know the kids were falling behind us. You catch someone in the window, we've gone into several stores, they've gone, and they've been either been there or followed us into the store. You're walking down the street, you think you're being followed, it's sort of playing again. Dang, I forgot that. And you walk around back to the store you just passed and walk into the store. Walk around the store, look, you know, come back out. If they're still out there. Now, if it's one person, I'm going to do this. It doesn't mean you should. What do you want? Excuse me? It says, you're following me. No, I'm not. It says, you're following me. I know you are. Bug off. And stand there until they retreat. Or, I'm calling a cop. Oh, by the way, I just took your picture. We had an incident at church here. I told Pete about it afterwards. I said, Pete, I got a suspicious person in the back parking lot. Okay. And I didn't ask for help, so he didn't. Young man had pulled in over in the parking lot in the school side. Get out of his car, got in his car, got out of his car, opened the trunk, fidgeting around with stuff in the trunk, taking stuff out of the trunk, putting it back in the trunk, closing the trunk, get back in his car. I don't know if he was living out of his car, but he was making me hinky. Because right at about that time, it was one of the times that they had one of those Al-Qaeda attacks or terrorist attacks. I'm going like, okay, I'm sorry, I'm profiling. Dark skin, dark hair, can't see enough of my eyesight ain't that great, but I know he's acting suspicious. So what I did, I walked to the Med Center medium, took out my phone, and I made sure he saw me, and I took a picture. And I took another picture. And he got into his car. As soon as I did that, he got into his car, and he left. And I took a picture of his car. I took a picture of his license plate, which turned out to be garbage because I didn't focus it. The minute I took the picture of him, he left. Sometimes just they knowing you know is enough. The avoidance is the wisdom, the action, the application of what you know. If you know trouble's coming, you can avoid it. You know, Scripture says, what man, if he knows he's going to come, burglar's going to come into his, break into his house, he's going to let him break into his house? Be forearmed as forewarned, or forewarned as forearmed. Now, that being said, if something happens and you still get into a confrontational situation, it doesn't matter, you just... It just rolls right up on you. There are things you can do to minimize in an avoidance. It's the fine line between avoiding it and flight. Running, literally, run. No ego, no pride, we're running. I'm going to run if I have to. There's ways to talk to a person. Someone cuts you off. You cut someone off, and you cut them off. And they're ranting and raving. They get out of their car, and they are flying. Now, there's two types of emotional responses when it comes to that kind. It's called the slow boil or the flash. All right. The flash is when you walk up to him he assaults you. Nothing said. He's already angry. He's already past the slow boil. The slow boil, he's working his way up to get legitimately, in his mind, legitimately angry enough to do something to you. Or he's expressing his extreme displeasure. There's a borderline between that and actual violence, because sometimes that gap is not there. People don't have the walls, the steps, the barriers to stop that. They don't have control over it. So they're frothing at the mouth and yelling at you. You say, "You stupid, blah, blah, you cut me off." Now, you don't want to interrupt them because that's rude. No, because that pisses them off. You don't want to say, "Hey, you did that." Because the minute you say "you," they stop listening. Psychologically, you stop listening. You ever get in an argument with your husband and your husband says, "You did that"? The minute he says "you," you don't hear a word after that, do you? Right? So we say, whoa, wait a minute. Excuse me. Yes, I did cut you off. I apologize. I didn't see you. Now I'm using my barriers. I'm stancing. I'm being calm. I'm not raising my voice. I'm not returning in kind. Okay? Diffuse, deflate, de-escalate, distract. If you have to, "Hey, look at the cop." That thing, don't get out of your car. If he starts beating on your car, let him beat his fists on your car. Most he's going to do is damage your car, crash a window. Now, the other thing is, when you're driving, the point on driving, how close do you get to the car in front of you when you stop? A part of avoidance, being aware of your spatial surroundings. I always try, now I'm not always successful, I always try to make sure that I see their bumper and part of their tire below the top of my car. The reason that is, if I have to, I can pull by the car in front of me. If you're too close, you can't get away. You're trapped. So if the idiot comes up and starts pounding on my car, my response would be, "Bye, put it in gear, drive around the car in front of me and leave." And I'm calling 911. So that's also part of awareness avoidance. Watch your spacing. When you're walking, watch your spacing, watch the crowds. You're in the car. Now, being said that you can talk your way out, you can de-escalate, you can deflate, you need to be honest to say, "Yeah, I did cut you off. I apologize." And you can actually use what they call clip words, which is this book I would strongly advise you get and read. Not everything is applicable, but it works wonders. It's written by an ex-police officer, professor. Pete's actually had seminars on this. This guy is great. Deals with people in not in their best situations a lot of times, so he has good skills. How to talk your way out, right? You want to use not calming words because they're going to get insulted. "Oh, I'm not a child. You're trying to calm me down." You want to use firm. You don't want to be meek. You don't want to be combative. You don't want to return in kind. You do not want to raise your voice. You do not want to use vulgar language in return. You want to be calm when they're not. So you are in control of the situation. Being aware, don't get trapped standing in your car with the door open in your car in that little V. You're in a cul-de-sac, you have nowhere to go. Right? Don't get out of your car if you can. If you have to get out of your car, you actually got into an accident and they're spewing, you need to inspect it. Be aware. Have your phone out already. Don't pay attention to the damage as much as you pay attention to the person. The damage to your car has been done.
It's still going to be there.
It's still going to, right, it's still going to be there. You don't have to worry about it. It's done. Oh, well. But the damage he could do to you because he's fuming because he thinks you stopped too soon and he rear-ended you, but by the way, legally, he's at fault, not you. So, talking your way, now, that being said again, talking your way out of certain situations ain't going to do you a world of good. If you're involved with a criminal who is using a weapon or has you as a target and has determined, "I'm going to mug you," you're not going to talk them out of it. They want what they want. They don't care what you do, what you say. They're going to get what they want no matter what they have to do. Drugs, alcohol, whatever the reason is, they don't care. Right? But you can still talk because it's a stalling tactic. It gives you seconds. It gives you time. Look around and say, "Where are my avenues of escape? What weapons does he have?" Now, this is a brief of weapons. Most of you know I carry a knife. And some of you may already know this answer, but how many do you think I carry?
What?
How many do you think I carry?
Probably four. Maybe five.
All right. Those who don't know me, I carry a minimum of two.
And one roll of duct tape.
Yeah, that always do. All right. When I was in the martial arts, my teacher gave me responsibility of teaching sharp and pointies, because the only thing sharp and pointy he taught was the old military stuff, and that's basically century removal. And I was enough of a knife nut that he thought, yeah, you can teach these guys, at least the basics. All right. He used to say, you never let them see it until they feel it. I know it sounds odd, but the idea is to make you think about what's being said. You don't let them see the knife, they feel it. All right. My premise is I carry two minimally. One for show and one for go. Well, you're busy looking at this one because I put my hand here. All right. But I also have this one. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm a little excessive and a little bit nutty, but I have it four, yeah. Well, one of them's a Leatherman. It's technically not a knife, but... So you need to pay attention to the hands, where the hands are. If I go like this, you know, now you're paying attention to this one, right? The one that's obviously in my pocket. Most people wear them in their pockets. You're not paying attention to this. You put your hand down to try to avoid me taking this one off. Now, I've just opened you up. The other rule of knife fighting was go for the low-hanging fruit. The groin area is called the triangle of death. You have your bladder. You have lots of veins and arteries in there and nerves. Self-defense. You kick someone in the groin. You're not actually kicking him in the testicles. Sorry, I'm trying not to be. In the testicles, you're actually kicking him between the anus and the testicles. There's a group of nerves and arteries that go across the sciatic notch there that will actually cause more damage in response than getting kicked in the testicles. My wife did it by accident to me once. We were wrestling. I didn't hear her say no. She got up, got pissed at me. I started in and tickling her again. She kicked me square, and she caught me just right. I stood up. And I just keeled over. I grayed out for a fraction of a second, was down. And she's going, what are you doing? Get up. What are you so? I said, dear, give me a second. She actually caught me in the right spot. And it wasn't very hard. It was the right spot. It's a unique feeling. So we have awareness, the head knowledge, what's surrounding, avoidance, technique. Now remember, you can talk your way out, learn, get that book and learn some, even some. It's like when you say, I apologize, don't say I apologize. I apologize. Drop the ah. It's called clipping the words. For some reason, it has a different effect on people. You know, you need to interrupt. You don't want to interrupt, but you need to slow the roll. Whoa, whoa. Wait a minute, sir. Not wait a minute, sir. Wait a sir. Clipping the words. For some reason, psychologically, it has an effect. It kind of stops. Whoa, whoa. Get their attention. Whoa, so wait a sec. Yeah, it's slamming words together and clipping them. Your brain starts, wait a minute, I recognize that, but I think for some reason it works. You know, it gives you a chance to, okay, insert, yes, I did cut you off. I really didn't see you. I apologize. Any damage done to the vehicle? You stop that slow boil continuing. Because if you come back and you're sarcastic, do not use sarcasm. Do not be belligerent. Do not return in kind. Do not raise your voice like they are. Do not use vulgar language like they are using. Because now you're putting, instead of water on the fire, you're putting gasoline on the fire. You know, well, at least.
While you're talking, there's a couple of experiences I have, because I did get mugged. The thing about, do you know what time it is?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kid. I mean, he was like 16, and I was like maybe 20. And then he goes, oh, and do you know what this is? And he had a gun, and he wanted my money.
Do you know what time it is? You just look down. Yeah. Where's your vision now?
Yeah. So that was the first thing. But the second thing is, don't be vulgar, all that, but in New York, in Penn Station, when you're coming off the trains, sometimes people pretend that they're red caps and they're going to take your bags to a taxi and mm-hmm. all that, and they're going to help you. But I had already been warned about that.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody came up and said, let me take your bag. And I didn't know what to do because I literally just got off the train. So I just started yelling and swearing, and they took off.
Right. My father was not big on vulgar language. Right. I accidentally dropped the F-bomb at the dinner table once when I was in my mid-teens. And my father just looked at me, put his knife and fork down, just looked at me and says, we do not use that kind of language in this household. When I'm sorry, Dad. I apologize. I won't do it again. But he also believed, like I believe, hitting your thumb with a 5-pound sledgehammer, oh darn, does not cut it. Yeah, now I can get colorful. I used to be able to swear in about 5 different languages. I worked in a large warehouse with a lot of minorities, and I learned all the vulgar language. I could swear in Portuguese, Spanish, Mexican, Vernish, Puerto Rican, and French, and Laotian. Now, I don't remember any of that stuff now, thank goodness, but it took me a long time to get that out of my system. I was very fluent in the vulgar language. There are times that you need to be firm. You pick your vulgarity carefully. You see that being calm doesn't work. You use your spatial awareness. You start backing off. Pride and ego do not come into this situation. Because the whole goal is to avoid this. Because remember, they're better at it than you are. They've done it more often. They've probably experienced more pain in their life than you could imagine. Or they don't care. They're going to do whatever they have to do to get what they want. Cut you, stab you, beat you, shoot you, doesn't matter. So not to get there, learn this. So pride and ego go out the window. You're meek but not subservient. You're firm but not belligerent. You take control. Guide them. Can we talk about this? Let's step out of the road and talk about this. As they go around and step around outside, you get in your car and you drive off. That's distraction, diversion. Be sneaky. It works. Now, as I said, tip in your car. When you get in front, when you're behind someone, make sure you have enough room to pull around them if you have to. Now, I know in some city streets and some traffic, that is darn near impossible. But if you have to, jump in your car and push the car in front of you out of the way until you get enough room and then go. I'd rather have to do an insurance claim than be dealing with someone trying to shoot me, kill me, or have to get into a physical confrontation. Now, by the way, doing that, you've just involved the police. The guy in the car you just banged and pushed out of the way is going to be calling the cops. The person behind you is going to be calling the cops. Well, they should be. The person you just cut off in the parking, in the intersection because you just went against the red light, should be calling a cop. And if there's a cop around, he should be seeing this thing. Okay. All right, you brought in third-party intercession. That's your best bet. Again, that book is going to give you a lot of tactics on this, too. Avoidance. How to recognize. How do you recognize when someone's mad? How do you recognize when they're at a flash or at a boil? Some people, there's no transition. It's just boom. It's an on switch. Other people, they're working slowly up to getting angry enough to give you a whack. For some reason, they have to get certain point where they say, okay, I am legitimately angry enough, I'm going to hit them. I have enough reason that we'll give them a good whack. Right? Or they're just out of control. You don't know what's... little empathy doesn't hurt either. Now, I'm not saying you legitimizing what they're doing, but empathizing means that I can understand. He just got fired from his job. You don't know that. His wife, he just caught his wife cheating. Or she applied for divorce and slipped it under the door and packed her bags and he came home to an empty house. He just got cut off 4 times by a tractor-trailer truck. Or yesterday, someone sideswiped him because they cut him off. So being aware that they might have a reason to be angry, but not necessarily that angry. It's a little empathy, but that just a little bit. And you want to stay in control. The more out of control the situation is, the more distance you need. Basically, the higher the emotional content of what's going on, the more distance you want. If the guy is already frothing at the mouth when he gets out of his car, don't get out of your car. Don't roll down your window. Make him talk through the window. It's going to piss him off, but oh well. Because if it's one of these persons that are flash, the minute you open your car and you step out and you go to step out, you're now trapped. That's the perfect trap. And when your door and car is open and you're stepping out and you're just starting to stand up, you cannot defend yourself from that position. They will take advantage of that. They know that. You ever seen two people facing off? Nose to nose. Calling names. Spewing on each other. Just touching. Seeing who's going to flinch first. Even with your peripheral vision, you can't see their hands. You can't see him going like this. While he's doing this, he just took a knife out of his pocket and opened it. People are scary. Remember, sin nature goes deep. So in some instances, you can talk your way out of it. In other instances, you can't. But it doesn't hurt to talk because it gives you a delay tactic. Minimally, gives you time to say, okay, where are my exits? How the heck am I going to get out of here? How am I going to beat feet? That's where this comes in. Run. You're not running from danger. You're running to safety. Running from danger is blind, cartoon stuff. You want to run with a purpose, run with a destination, and as you're running, you're looking for tools of opportunity, as I call them. Natural weapons. Rocks, stones, bricks, pallet, trash barrel, keys, if you already have them on you. I have some tools, what's called EDC, everyday carries. We'll discuss that a little bit too, because be aware what you carry. They may ask you if the police are involved, why do you have that? Now, I'm going to have a hard time explaining why I carry so many pieces of cutlery. I'm going to worry about that after. If I ever have to use mine, one, he's not going to be making the complaint. If I have to cut someone, I'm cutting them to the bone. All right? Long, deep, wide, and often. And they're not likely going to want to report it. Right? You get into a confrontation, another way to discuss it, he starts at me and says, whoa, listen. You can say, do we really want to go there? He says, there's a couple ways this could go, as the conversation goes. You could make a big rep for beating up a short, stubby old man with prosthetic knees and arthritis. I mean, your friends aren't going to think much of that. And there's still going to be police involved. And there's going to be arrests. Or it could go the other way. You could really come in, and I have to defend myself, and I beat the living crap out of you. How are you going to explain that to young friends, this short, stumpy old man with prosthetic knees and arthritis just beat the living tar out of me? And there's still going to be police involved. You can explain the pluses and the minuses. Or you could just say, all right, we disagree, and we'll part our ways. You place options, because they're not thinking options. They're tunnel vision. You give them options. You can let this go and just walk away. Or we could have this situation or this situation. Both of them, none of them are pleasant. Right? You give them options. You take control. Now, there's a saying that I used to hear. He said, there's two things about old tigers. Old tigers. Tigers. They didn't get old by being stupid, and they're still tigers. You want to stick your hand in their cage? Go ahead. Now that goes to, this is part of this too. So you want to run to safety. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and is safe. You purposely run. I mean, literally, I'm talking about literally running if you have to, or if you can't run, hobble. Get out of there. Change your path. Don't go straight. Go to crowd, safety in numbers. Don't yell, I'm being mugged, or I'm trying to rape me. People are going to hide. Fire. Yell fire. People love a fire. They'll come and see a fire. And right now, that's still just as bad as right there. Keep your vocality specific. Pick your exit. Don't end up running into a blind alley. Okay? That means you may have to slow down some to figure out where you are if you don't know where the area is. Now, I have an odd habit. I'm horrible with street names. Put me in the middle of a wood forest, and I can find my way home. I might be, may not know exactly where I am, but I can find my way home. I did this to my kids when they were young. We would go out woodwalking, and we go out there for an hour at a time or so, and the first time I said, oh, I'm tired. I said, okay, let's go home. And they look at me like, well, how do we get home? Jacob's reply was, you mean you don't know where we are? And Megan's getting a little upset. I know where we are. I'm just asking if you know where we are. After that, I taught them how to pay attention when you're walking to figure out how to get back. Pick up signs, being aware of your surroundings, picking up little signposts. Now, if you put me in the middle of a city, I'm going to get misery lost in a flash. Because I don't function on signage. I function on landmarks, and all buildings look the same. What I do is when I'm driving, let's say I'm going to Megan's house, and I have time, I'll take a side street that's by her house and see where it goes. I'll take another street down past her house. I also found out there's a way to cross over from her house all the way around, come down on, or what's the name of the street? This one comes out on. See, I don't remember the street.
By Milano's, it comes out. If you, yeah. Your way through.
You know the Kung Fu shop right there, the Kung Fu place? You go straight down through there, go all the way down to the end, take a right. Come to the Mass. Right, go Mass Pike, find out how to go to Mass Pike. Alternate routes. Right. Around my house, I don't have alternate routes. I got two ways to get to work. Peck Orchard Road, or I have to go down 57. Guess what? They're doing construction on Peck Orchard Road now, so I got a 15-minute detour I have to do. It's making it a game. I know alternative ways to get here. Right? Know your alternatives. Be aware. So you want to run to safety, not from danger. You want to purposely escape. And while you're escaping, you're looking for tools of opportunity. That's my politically correct way of finding a good weapon to whack them in the head with. Bricks, stones, nothing's out of bounds. There are no rules in fighting, by the way.
Handbags.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get a discussion of handbags, too. All right? All right, so when all these fail, you come to this. Now, I have a couple handouts here on how to keep your house safe, rules, things that burglars look for. I'll give them out to you afterwards. All right? Your car. Don't keep your iPods and that stuff visible in your car. Again, don't make it the target. If they don't see it, they're not going to break into your car to steal it. Don't keep spare change in your ashtray. I have pennies. Thinking someone's going to see the change and bust out my window for a handful of pennies. Yep.
Anytime our cars in the driveway, they leave the change.
Yeah. Well, they broke into our cars once, but they didn't have to break in because we the one time I didn't leave my car unlocked, Megan was home, I was home, Jacob was home. They went through all three of our cars in the time that I got up to look out the window to see what the heck was going on, and they were already gone. They drove up, one guy jumped out of the car, went and rifled through the cars, and by the time he reached from one driveway to the other driveway, he jumped back into the car and was gone. I heard him stop, so I got up to look, and by the time I looked, he'd already gotten back in the car and gone. In the meantime, they'd gone through all three of our cars. We left the doors unlocked. They took anything that wasn't nailed down except the Christian CDs. So your sphere of influence you have to be aware of is also your home here at church. Because you're at church here, does that mean you can be oblivious? We have a safety group here that watches out for you, but does that mean that you can't be watching too? No. More eyes on it, the better it is. Your car, your surrounding of your car, inside your car. My car, I have what I have, a get-home kit. Not a bug-out kit, but a get-home kit. I work right next to an Air National Guard base. If there is an incident, do you know what their protocol is?
Lockdown.
They lock down, and that means all the streets around them. Nobody moves. I got 18-something miles to get home. I'm not staying there if there's going to be an incident. And, you know, All right, they're a target. Someone's going to nuke them. They're going to nuke them. I'm going to be there. So I have in my bag what I need to get home. Some basics, a little bit of food, a little bit of cover. I have some tools so that I can walk my way home. I also have a map of the local roads with all the alternates that I can know how to get past there. I know if I cut through the backfield at work, I drop down the end of the street down here, three blocks out of the way. I know how to walk my way home. It may take me a while, but I can walk my way home. I also carry a buck saw, an axe, a full-size axe, a shovel, and a tow rope. I know, I'm excessive. Well, it's not sort of bury the body in the backyard, although I did threaten one person that. When I'm driving to work, I have, as I said, two ways to get to work. I leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. If it's bad weather, they haven't plowed the roads yet. There's been a time when I was going to work, I went down Peck Orchard, there's a tree down, and a big tree down at Peck Orchard site. It took me a couple minutes to turn around because there's no driveways. I had to back up, you know, 150 feet up the back of this icy road, finally find a driveway I can turn around that wasn't plowed, but end up getting stuck. Drive past my house, go back all the way down to 57, drive down, get onto 189, and there's a tree down in 189. Now, I had not carried the buck saw and the axe at that time. I soon did that because it would take me less time to chop off a couple branches, saw off this I need, put the tow rope on it, pull the tree out of the way and go. I would have made it to work. If I'm late to work 5 minutes, I'm docked 15. If I'm 15 minutes late, I'm docked half an hour. If I'm half an hour, I don't get paid for half the day.
Yep. That's the way it goes. Oh, absolutely.
So I work with the idea of I have what I need to get to work, I have what I need to get home. When you're out and about, we were talking about this right here, when you're walking around. Now, another way to practice your skills is when you're doing, you go out for a woods walk. Try to identify the trees you see. What kind is it? What is that bush? Keep your mind active. Gee, I saw a squirrel. Gee, I saw a black squirrel. I didn't know black squirrels were in this area. I saw chipmunks. I saw a rattlesnake. It's a way of getting your mind active in what you're doing while you're doing something. It's back to this is exercising your mind. Right? It's like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, it gets atrophied. So you can apply this, and then apply this if necessary. Now, when we get into here, it's a different situation. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about EDCs, everyday carries, things that I carry. I carry, you know, I already said, you missed it, my, you know, one for show, one for go. I have a custom-made one. I made this bugger myself. This is aircraft aluminum. A lot harder than the aluminum ones you get here. It's also square. I put these nifty little notches in there for finger, for helping it, but it also means that when you do this, it makes nasty, it's got teeth. It's got this neat little asterisk mark on the end. Mr. Brown, how do you know that's the guy that assaulted you? Yeah, see the asterisk on his forehead? Yeah, they match.
Is that like the mark of the beast?
Could be. It's a mark of the brown. It's square, it has sharper edges.
Family crest.
All right? So I can apply more damage. A lot of the stuff I'm going to do when I show you the fighting techniques can be done with this in your hand. Because one of the principles I like to use is called the natural fist. This is a natural fist. See the thumb isn't in the right place? Okay? This is a punching fist. Natural fist. Most people don't know how to make a fist. You should put the thumb over the top or off to the side, but not fully over here. Right? Natural fist. Your hand is a lousy weapon, by the way. These bones break real easy. Knuckles split. I've split this knuckle 3 times. I've split this one enough times to see you can't really see the gap too much. That one's kind of like, and I also have severe arthritis because of it, too. They split real easy, given the right circumstances. This is a lot harder. Okay? And by the way, this isn't the weapon. From here to here is the weapon. Your forearm is nice and hard. And you don't have to train it that way. The idea is not to train your hands to be tough, to use natural weapons that are already tough. So we have our natural EDCs. You notice also I have a lot of danglies on my keys. When I'm going to my car, I have my door key and I have my other stuff. My door key is the first one. I held it like this so when I get to the door, I can open it. But in the meantime, my hands are already here. I have my keys out before I go to my car. When I go to my car, when I come here on Fridays, I park against the fence. Donna knows, we've discussed this. I only have three sides to check now because I'm against the fence. When I walk up to my car, I'm also looking underneath my truck. Now, my truck's tall enough I can see. And I give myself at least a four-foot berth as I walk around the end of my truck, so I have plenty of room to see if someone's waiting on the other side. Same thing with going around corners. Give yourself, don't hug the corner. Give yourself a wide berth. You hug a corner, someone's coming through this door, and I'm standing right here. Oops. Doesn't give you enough time. If I'm coming through and I come wide, your peripheral vision comes in play. Now, they have various types of these little toys. They have, you know, this one. You have, like, the plastic foam one. You have the aluminum one. I have my nasty version that I've made, that this one gives you extra pinching surfaces and hooks that really, you spend a little bit, it takes a little more time and training to learn this. By the way, it's hard plastic, very hard plastic, with two metal prongs. That's borderline brass knuckles. That's going to get in trouble with the police. Also, it's hard to get out of your pocket. It has the nifty thing of these, but these tend to catch on things, so it's not an easy carry. So it has its uses. It has its drawbacks. A good flashlight. Tractor Supply, $8. 200 lumens. That's enough to blind you. That's what you want. You want something, if you shine a flashlight in someone's eyes. Yeah, I got one. Yeah, this one has the three. High, medium, and then the strobe. You know, the one that gives you the, sends you to cardiac arrest. This one has what they call the creneled top. Right? Yeah, it hurts. See, see that? The idea is if you have to hit someone with it, you hit them and you twist. You hit and twist. It will open skin. And it will leave a definite mark. Oh, yeah, that's the guy who got me right there. It matches. You want at least 100, preferably 200 lumens. That is enough that if you shine it in someone's eyes, they will see spots for seconds after. It actually blinds them. Okay. It's disorientating. You have... Oh, this is one of my favorites. It's called a spring cosh. This is the damage. The end. The rest is just whip. Still hurts, but it's, but you do this. Again, you're going to have to explain why you're carrying a spring cosh.
Is that illegal?
No, it's not. But... Yeah, yeah. You can get spring cosh. You get the solid ones like this one. This is a small, cheaper one. This is my throwaway, so if I have to beat someone, I can throw it away. I'm not going to care because I didn't spend a lot of money with it. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. Okay. Now, the less likely things that... This is a little mini screwdriver, can opener tool. This one I love, and I would like to get more of this. These. I've had this for a while. It used to be pink. It's the breast cancer awareness ribbon. They were selling them, and I can't find them anymore. If you happen to see them, let me know. It was like $1.50 on your keychain. But it just fits so perfectly. Okay. Here. In here, and the gap is just right. It takes up. That's gonna hurt. Okay, punch, twist, get him under the nose, go right up the nostrils, and give it a pull. Yeah, ouch. Oh, while we're on nostrils, facial jewelry. When I see facial jewelry, do you know what I think? I'm sorry. Handles, pull strings. You know, pull straps. Those earplugs, zip ties. Ladies, have you ever pulled an earring out of a pierced ear? It hurts like hell and you bleed like a stuck pig. Imagine what it was like if you have one of those stupid ear gauges in, and you stick your finger through that ear gauge, and you just give it a yank. Now, in general, pain is not to be relied on as an accurate deterrent, but it's a good setup for the other stuff. Sometimes you give them a good yank and pull that out of their face. You pull out a nose stud or a lip stud. And the other thing is using your fists. You punch someone in the face and they have a lip stud. Yeah, it's going to hurt them, but it's going to cut you up something fierce. It won't hurt as much here. It won't hurt as much here. And if they got a lip stud and you palm them and you rake that up there, you're going to rip it out. So as far as I'm concerned, face jewelry is my advantage. Pull cords. You know, zip strings, you know, all that fun stuff. It's like, to me, that's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Common everyday markers. They're not sturdy as the Coubertin type things, but they will do the job. The only thing, as I say, is use it capped down, so if the cap splits, you're gonna give them permanent tattoos. It will hurt. It will do the job. A regular pen will do the job. Even El Cheapo combs, okay? It's not much, but that's extended more. You poke someone in the eye with that, it doesn't matter. Your eyes are really sensitive, okay? You stick them in the neck, it doesn't matter. It's really sensitive, even though this is a flimsy. Regular, everyday. I have a little one that I carry. My wife calls it my self-defense comb because she's always making fun of me. It's a little black one about this big. You take this comb and you jam it up underneath their nose here and you continue pushing. Push right here. Okay. Just on your nose. Push a little bit. It hurts, doesn't it? It's very sensitive. That little bit of cartilage is very sensitive. It doesn't take much. So even if this breaks, I'm going to jam it up onto the end of the nose, and I'm going to give it a good rake. Oh, hair picks. I'm sorry. I don't have to even think about how I'm going to use this. Okay? And you get the metal ones. They call them politically fro pricks. Someone's wearing that in their hair, I'm thinking, oh, hey, he's got a weapon already in plain sight. A lot of times, in the 70s, when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, guys would be wearing them in their hair. Common household scissors. Open them. All right? You're not just using the tips now, you're using the V that's in between there. So you now have a wider, nastier weapon. Plus, you can do this. So it's not just your typical open them up and use them. Okay? This is going to stop it from opening too much. Okay? Minimum. So think a little bit more tactical. I know it's like, ew. All right. When we're at the fight stage, there's no fair play. There's nothing that's out of bounds. Anything works. Oh, and this, have you guys seen these before? These are tactical pens. They either unscrew, or when you unscrew it, the pen, this one doesn't work, so I just made it a tactical sticky. You know, this one screw out, the pen would come out, or some would have caps you take off so you get to the pen, but it's hard aluminum body. But it's a pen. Most people aren't going to think twice about it. Did you think about twice about pen in my pocket when you saw it in my pocket? If you have them, yeah, you know. But if most people don't, they don't know what it is. Fine. They don't think about it. Carry it in, your weapon in plain sight. Now, given said with all that fun stuff, remember, you may have to explain why you had a 6-inch folding knife in your back pocket, which I get those. Right? A change purse, a good leather change purse full of coins is weighty enough that if you whack someone upside the head with it, it's going to give them a headache. Right. It's called a sap, and saps are basically leather pouches filled with lead powder or lead beads. Well, a change purse is a change purse. So what do you have in your purse that you could use as a weapon? Think about it. All right, now we're going to get to pepper spray. Who has pepper spray?
All right. Recently legalized alcohol.
In Massachusetts, now you don't need a permit to get it. You just need a valid driver's license in 18.
End of 2014, right. Big assignment.
All right, I'm going to ask some questions. If you know the answers, don't say anything, because I've probably already talked to Donovan. All right. What kind of pepper spray is it?
Huh? What
kind? Is it tear gas, caspium? What's the quantity of the how much caspium in it? What's the range?
6 feet.
Cut that in half. Does it spray a stream, cone, foam, mist? Because that makes a difference.
I have a question.
Sure.
Don't they say you should practice with it so that you know if you're going to have a certain angle or whatever?
The minute you use it, you break the seal, throw it out because it'll leak. They do make ones that have practice water mist canisters in them. Well, if you have to use it, I'm going to tell you to empty the sucker.
Yeah.
Right? You're done.
I just pulled mine out, and it actually has a use-by date.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. 2015.
They say about 2 years.
But
I would,
thinking it would probably still work.
I say about 2 years. See, mine's pretty beat up. I've only had this one a year, but it's in and out of my pocket a lot. A year. Get rid of it. And that's when you use it to practice with.
A year from when?
When you purchase it. Look at the purchase date on it. Look at the purchase date. It has a use-by date when you buy it. Make sure
it's used by 2020, but you would say from the time I bought it, a year.
All right. The minute you break the seal. Now, this one has a safety. I have to flick it off the side. That's going to leak. All right. It's not going to hold pressure. Shake it once a day. When you get up in the morning, go to get your stuff in your purse, give it a shake. It is aerosol. It needs to be aerosol-like. The stuff inside needs to be mixed into the aerosol. They can settle, all right? And what you be spraying is going to be aerosol with very little of the stuff. This one happens to have caspium, tear gas, and this nice, bright, annoying red dye. So whoever sprayed is going to be covered in red dye. And my advice is, if it says it has a 10-foot range, assume 5, okay? Cover yourself while you spray. You're going to get back spray. Plus, it takes 3 to 10 seconds for this to work, and 1 out of 10 people can use this as a breath freshener. It has no effect on them at all. So while you're spraying them, they're still flailing, striking, looking for a weapon, trying to grab you, poke you, kick you, stab you, shoot you. So this covers, this is called the Dracula's cape, by the way. This covers your face and minimizes the spray back, protects your neck and face and the side of your head. Right?